The Israeli forces continue the siege of a major hospital in southern Gaza, turning it into a military base and arresting a large number of medical staff. A rights advocacy group says Israel is committing the crime of enforced disappearance against Palestinian citizens kidnapped from Gaza. And the head of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees says Israel is waging a concerted campaign to destroy UNRWA. Thank you for joining us. Today's top story, Israeli forces have carried out arrests at Nasser Hospital, Gaza's largest functioning hospital, as airstrikes hit across the besieged territory. Gaza's health officials say regime forces detained a large number of medical staff inside the hospital. They said Israeli forces turned the hospital into a military base. Regime forces raided the facilities on Thursday after laying siege on it for weeks. Meantime, the Israeli occupation has committed 9 more massacres against families in the Gaza Strip. It has killed 83 people and wounded 125 others during the past 24 hours. At least 10 civilians, including women and children, were killed by Israeli airstrikes hitting a residential building in central Gaza and a farmland in the south of the Strip. Nearly 29,000 Palestinians have been killed and about 1.5 million displaced in the Israeli genocide in Gaza since October the 7th. Now to talk more on this, we are joined by Mr. Paul Foote, academic and commentator from Irvine, California. Mr. Foote, welcome to Press TV. Now, Mr. Foote, the Israeli army has besieged the facility for weeks, trapping thousands of patients, medical staff, and displaced families inside the hospital. And now Israeli soldiers arrested a large number of workers at the besieged facility. Mr. Foote, the question is, why the medical staff? I mean, they are performing their professional humanitarian duty in treating the wounded and the sick. The Palestinian NGO urges the international community to take swift action to stop the alarming rate of enforced disappearance of Palestinians from the Gaza Strip. The Palestinian Prisoner Society said despite the global outcry, Tel Aviv refrains from disclosing any information about the fate of the kidnapped Palestinians. The organization also expressed concern about reports of executions and torture by Israeli soldiers. The NGO urged the international community to take swift action to stop such crimes. Last week, Geneva-based human rights group Euromed published a bombshell report. It said Israel brings groups of settlers to prisons to witness the torture of the abductees from Gaza. The Geneva-based group says the regime even allows the settlers to film the abductees as they are stripped naked and beaten with metal batons and electric sticks. The group had condemned such acts of brutality as a war crime and crime against humanity, warning that it will fuel hatred and extremism. Israeli forces have clashed with protesters in Tel Aviv during a large-scale demonstration against the regime's political failures. Thousands of Israelis gathered outside the Ministry of Military Affairs and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's residence. Israeli forces beat numerous demonstrators and detained some. Protesters demanded the release of Israeli captives held by Palestinian resistance groups. The premier has been under fire for prioritizing his political interests in Gaza over the lives of the captives. Netanyahu has been in hot water as he is embroiled in a number of scandals. The Israeli premier is charged with fraud and breach of trust. This has prompted protesters to take to the streets almost every weekend to call for his immediate resignation. The head of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, Felipe Lazzarini, says Israel is waging a concerted campaign aimed at dismantling UNRWA. Lazzarini said the regime believes that if the UN agency is abolished, the status of the Palestinian refugees will be resolved once and for all, and with it, the right of return. He said this has been a long-term political goal of Tel Aviv. He cited various Israeli actions as evidence, including revoking UNRWA's VAT exemptions, restricting food deliveries through Ashdod Port, and targeting over 150 UNRWA facilities since October the 7th. Israel has called for Lazzarini to step down following claims that a Hamas tunnel had been discovered under its evacuated Gaza City headquarters. Lazzarini said the tunnel was 20 meters below ground and UNRWA, as a humanitarian organization, did not have the capabilities to examine what was underground in Gaza. Earlier, we were joined by former president of Guyana, Donald Ramotor, for an exclusive interview on the Israeli genocide in Gaza. He said UNRWA funding cuts by the US and its allies are aimed at appeasing Israel and are a response to the ICJ ruling. Let's take a listen.
Well, the first instance is, I would say that this is part of a legacy of colonialism in the area, in which Palestinian people were given no choice, they were given no options, they were given nothing at all when this Israel was imposed on the Palestinian state. And the problem actually started from then, because without consultation, people moving into your territory. And then what happened in 1948, which is called the Nakba, is compounding the problem. And that problem has not been resolved up to this point in time. The Palestinian people have been, in my view, the people who have been subjected to the worst type of oppression, national oppression, for more than 75 years since the occupation. Since the extension of Israel came into existence. But what is taking place here today is definitely a genocide, probably comparable with the worst atrocities of Hitlerite fascism in the Second World War. The unfortunate thing is that many of the countries who were the colonial masters, the countries that support this actions, are the very countries that colonialized the world, and the United States, which has become the new imperialist. I think that this, what they did with the UN agency there, was a response, in my view, to the ruling of the court, in order to satisfy Israel that they're on their side, and this was a direct attack on it, because these are mere accusations, without any investigation beginning. These people are dismissed, and they immediately withheld whatever funding that they have been giving to the UN UNRWA body, giving it to them. They have withdrawn and withheld a lot of money, and that makes them complicit with the genocide and the starvation that is taking place in the Gaza Strip right now.
The US-dominated bloc of G7 has voiced its concern over the risk of forcible displacement of Palestinians out of Gaza and the consequences of an onslaught against Rafah region. A statement by the bloc said G7 foreign ministers called for urgent action to address the catastrophic humanitarian crisis in Gaza. They also expressed deep concern for the potentially devastating consequences of Israel's full-scale attack on the Rafah region. The U.S. and some of its allies have in recent days voiced concern over the staggering civilian casualties in Gaza and the regime's plans to attack Rafah. However, the U.S. has stopped short of taking any action to discourage the regime from killing more Palestinians and even moved to send more weapons to Gaza. The U.S. has been providing the regime with advanced weapons and munitions throughout the onslaught. Washington has also vetoed two UN Security Council resolutions that call on the regime to end this aggression. That's while hundreds of thousands of pro-Palestinian protesters have again marched through central London, calling on the British government to push for a ceasefire in Gaza and to stop its military and political support for the apartheid Israeli regime. As Saipul Rezal reports, British political parties' position on the Gaza genocide has become a centrepiece of elections taking place in the UK this year.
Anger in the streets of London. Another mass protest. A turnout of hundreds of thousands. Veteran campaigners, young activists, British Jewish groups.
It's the fourth national demonstration of the year and the second one to end outside the Israeli embassy here in London. And their message, these protesters say, is clear. Stop the genocide now.
That's what they have been demanding for more than 4 months now. and the impending Israeli incursion into the southern Gaza city of Rafah that shelters more than 1.5 million Palestinians accounts for today's turnout, one of the largest since it all began.
We're watching these messages, we're watching these videos of people getting slaughtered on a daily basis, but we're not insensitized to this. The Western media, the Western world is desensitized to this. Well, we won't. We will stand for our Palestinian brothers and sisters in Gaza, in the West Bank, wherever, to get rid of this cancer that is Zionism, and we're going to fight until the day that Palestine is free.
A free Palestine is yet to come. But there is a chance for British politicians to stop the ongoing mass slaughter. On February 21st, MPs, representatives of the British public, will be voting on a second ceasefire motion. The first such vote, November last year, didn't pass muster. We asked Ben Jamal of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign what message a no vote would send to the Palestinians.
It will deliver a message to the Palestinian people that the British Parliament says your lives don't matter. The message we've delivered today is that they do matter to the British people, and that now the British Parliament needs to start listening to what the British people are saying.
The political party's position on Israel's genocidal war on Gaza has taken center stage in this year's upcoming general elections in the UK. And the protesters here say it determines which way their vote will go. Saeed Purizza, London.
Now, thousands of supporters of Pakistan's former Prime Minister Imran Khan have taken to the streets nationwide to condemn what they perceive as fraud and manipulation in the recent general elections. This comes in light of admissions by certain election officials acknowledging their involvement in the alleged vote rigging. Our correspondent Nasser Kazmi reports from the Pakistani capital, Islamabad.
Supporters of the jailed Pakistani former Premier Imran Khan and his party, Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf or PTI, held nationwide protests on Saturday to condemn alleged manipulation in the February 8 general election.
The mandate that the people of Pakistan has given the independent, so-called independent candidates, backed by none other than PTI, because our election symbol was taken away, our entire leadership is behind jails with sham, aapke jo mukadmaat hai. So this doesn't make any sense. When the people have spoken, they have to be respected. Otherwise, they will be on the street, it will be chaos, and no government, no political party will be able to rule.
Supporters of Imran Khan's party insist that widespread electoral manipulation has deprived their party of achieving 2/3 majority in the parliament.
I voted for Imran Khan, but I'm speaking as a Pakistani voter. I voted, I was there at 7:45 in the morning. I wanted to be first in line so that I could vote. By evening, our candidate was winning, everything was fine. 3 in the morning, suddenly the man lost. And he lost by 20,000 votes or God knows something like that. How is this possible? This is not possible and this is not acceptable.
However, Imran Khan's rival political group, Pakistan Muslim League Nawaz, says the PTI party tried to derail democracy by creating controversy around elections. A dramatic change in the political climate occurred when the commissioner of Rawalpindi, a city in northern Pakistan, tendered his resignation, citing a guilty conscience for his role in enabling widespread electoral manipulation in the garrison city.
We converted the losers into winners with 70,000 votes margin. The chief election commissioner and chief justice are involved in poll fraud. I accept all the responsibility. I should be hanged. I cannot participate in the crime that could destroy Pakistan.
This is while Pakistan's election commission has rejected claims made by the Rawalpindi commissioner, stating that no official of the electoral body gave any direction to him regarding the manipulation of results.
The outcry over alleged vote rigging in the recently held elections for national and state legislatures has sparked widespread protests among multiple political factions. Analysts warn that the absence of a clear mandate for any political party could lead to prolonged political instability and hinder efforts to address economic challenges of the country. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
And Iran has unveiled fully homegrown defensive weaponry. The military hardware includes an anti-ballistic missile system as well as a low-altitude air defense system. Gisumish Ahmadi reports from Tehran.
Guarding the homeland against the threats from above, Iran's defense ministry has unveiled advanced air defense systems, further strengthening its position as one of the few countries that have acquired the technology involved in the detection, tracking, interception, and destruction of attacking missiles, both long-range and short-range.
Today, we are witnessing major achievements that have significantly increased our defense capabilities. The Arman anti-ballistic missile defense system is named after martyr Arman Adiverdi. It is classified as a tactical air defense system. Arman is equipped with a domestically made Sayyad 3 class, and it is capable of simultaneously detecting and tracking 24 targets at a distance ranging from 120 to 180 kilometers.
This new cutting-edge defensive weapon is also equipped with a self-protection system that makes it immune to potential low-altitude threats. The Arman defense system's radars and missile launchers have been incorporated into a single vehicle to enhance agility in defensive operations, allowing it to engage in operation in less than 3 minutes.
Azarakhsh, the other system we are unveiling today, is a low-altitude defense system. It's considered a versatile defense weapon that can be installed on different types of vehicles. This adds to its mobility and makes it ideal for agile responses. Therefore, it can be used to provide security for protected areas.
The state-of-the-art technology applied in both of the newly unveiled military hardware enhances defensive posture and boosts deterrence to adversary aggression, significantly increasing Iran's air defense capabilities once they are added to the country's military fleet.
What you witness today is quite significant because defensive capabilities and air defense in particular can tip the scales in any aggression and war. That is why this kind of deterrence is crucial for our country, a lesson that we learned the hard way, because before the Islamic Revolution, we used to import everything from other countries.
Iran has made remarkable breakthroughs in manufacturing a broad range of homegrown military hardware in line with the policy to strengthen its defense capabilities, a red line that will never be up for any kind of negotiation.
Iran has come a long way over the past 45 years in its defense capabilities, becoming fully self-sufficient, turning from a country that had to import the military hardware that it needed to one that today is producing all the military equipment that it needs and also developing new ones. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
With that, we come to the end of this bulletin. Thank you for listening. Take care and bye-bye for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
A report has revealed that US military has been infiltrated by white supremacists and insurrectionists. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Daily Mail has covered this story and tells us more. The US military has been infiltrated by white supremacists and insurrectionists, with experts warning a recent Pentagon report detailing dozens of internal plots to overthrow the US government is just the tip of the iceberg. The Department of Defense, the Pentagon, released a report on 30th of November, revealing it has investigated 183 instances of extremism within the US military, including 78 cases of troops advocating for, engaging in, or supporting the overthrow of the US government. But experts have told the Daily Mail that the figures were likely to be a significant underestimate, pointing to a 2020 Military Times poll that showed a third of active service members had witnessed signs of white nationalism or racism among their fellow troops. Historians highlighted a litany of alarming cases in which both current and former US Army members have plotted to assassinate political leaders, bomb media organizations, and topple the US government. Many have never materialized, but those that do often have deadly consequences due to the military training of the perpetrators. Heidi Beirich, co-founder of the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism, charged the Pentagon with not doing enough to root out extremism within its ranks. She told the Daily Mail, "If the military doesn't take this seriously, it means terrorist attacks will be more violent, more successful. This is a poison for the rest of American society. If we don't rip these people out, they're deadly." In a 2019 New York Times report, Carter Smith, who served as an U.S. Army criminal investigator for 30 years before joining the faculty of Middle Tennessee State University, was quoted as saying that the military does not make this issue a priority. Carter Smith said, "They always say the numbers are small, and because of that, it is not a priority. Well, the numbers might be small, but they are like a drop of cyanide in your drink. They can do a lot of damage." The Pentagon report comes amid a series of alarming trends of extremism within the military. Over the past decade, a murderous neo-Nazi group has been founded by a former U.S. soldier. A growing number of plots to attack critical infrastructure in the United States have also hatched by current and former servicemen, while 18% of those charged in connection with the Capitol siege on 6th of January 2021 have military backgrounds. In the wake of the January 6 riots, the Pentagon admitted it did not know how to deal with the problem of extremism within its own ranks and ordered a military-wide pause to allow commanders a window to tackle the issue. Matt Dalek, a political historian at the George Washington University in Washington, D.C., pointed out that radicalization has been a long-standing concern within the U.S. military, the most infamous example being Timothy McVeigh, the former U.S. Army soldier behind the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing that left 168 people dead and injured nearly 700. More recently, a former active-duty U.S. Marine, a member of the Army Guard, was sentenced to 13 years in prison in 2020 after he was charged with plotting a terrorist massacre of journalists and Democrats, including former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Coast Guard Lieutenant Christopher Hassan was found to have held violent racist views even before he joined the U.S. military, raising questions over vetting procedures. But Matt Dalek, author of Birchers, How the John Birch Society Radicalized the American Right, said it was hard to tell whether a disproportionate number of servicemen held extremist beliefs due to a lack of data, but warned the issue was particularly concerning due to its potentially fatal fallout. He said, "There is a clear threat in people who are experts in weaponry, who have access to advanced knowledge about how to make bombs, who also have a radical view of the world that impels them to commit violence. That can be a pretty dangerous recipe." Heidi Beirich agreed that attitudes within the military tended to reflect a rise in white nationalism in wider society, but she said there appeared to be a disconnect between the Pentagon's report and the Military Times survey, which she believes indicates a far higher number of military personnel are involved in extremist activities. Heidi Beirich said there was a long history of white supremacist groups encouraging their members to join the military so they could learn how to blow things up and be better with weapons, while also spreading their hateful ideologies. The national broadcaster NBC News has also covered the same story. According to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, the growing threat from the far right is attributed to the growth of accelerationism, an ideology that seeks to destabilize society and trigger a race war. Indeed, a report published by the George Washington University in September of last year noted the number of white supremacist plots targeting energy systems had dramatically increased since 2016. Founded by former National Guard soldier who had a picture of fellow veteran and Oklahoma City bomber Timothy McVeigh on his dresser, the neo-Nazi group Atomwaffen Division has already been linked to several murders, bombings and plots in the United States and elsewhere. It has also been a part of the growing trend of infrastructure terrorism, in which insurrectionists have targeted critical power stations around the country in a bid to bring an end to the American way of life. According to a criminal complaint filed in Maryland, its founder, Brandon Russell, 28 years old, formerly a private first class in the National Guard, was arrested in February of this year over an alleged racist plot to completely destroy the power grid in the predominantly black city of Baltimore, Maryland. He stands charged with conspiring to inflict maximum harm by shooting at 5 substations operated by Baltimore Gas and Electric, which serves 1.2 million customers in central Maryland. He met his alleged co-conspirator, Sarah Beth Glendaniel, 27 years old, of Maryland, while the pair were in jail. They were caught in an FBI sting operation. In 2018, Russell was sentenced to prison after being convicted of explosives charges. Russell was released from prison in 2021 before his arrest over the Baltimore plot. Glendaniel had been serving a prison sentence for armed robbery when the pair met in prison.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints,
the presence of different scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. I am Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Rouhani and Sheikh Fadai, to discuss today's topic. Sheikh Fadai, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
All right, for today's episode of the program Viewpoints, we want to talk about the significance of the month of Sha'ban, or Sha'ban al-Mu'adham, the eighth month of the Hijri calendar. So in the Islamic calendar, mostly the months of Ramadan is very much considered as significant for Muslims, but also the months of Rajab and Sha'ban are important. Sheikh Rouhani, what is the significance of the month of Sha'ban al-Mu'adham?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Sha'ban al-Mu'adham, which is the eighth month of Hijri calendar.
Yes.
It is considered as one of the most honored and respected months of the year because it is attributed to the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and some of the happiest anniversaries of Islam and Tashayyu are also in this month. Such as the birthday of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salatu wassalam, Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salam, Imam al-Mahdi, and Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas alayhim alaf tahiyyati wassalam.
Yes.
Because of the birthday of all these great imams and personalities of Islam, we honor this month and we consider this month as one of the very significant months. As also, as you rightly mentioned, yes, it is before the holy month of Ramadan.
Yes.
It is a kind of preparation. In this month, the mu'mineen tries to prepare themselves for the holy month of Ramadan. In this month, we have special rituals to be performed and special, let's say, ibadat, worships, du'as, azkar are there that should be, or fasting is very much recommended in this holy month. Of course, it's a kind of spiritual month in which the mu'min and the true believer tries to prepare himself for entering into the next month, which is the holy month of Ramadan.
We will get to some of the recommended rituals and deeds in this month, Sheikh Rouhani. But Sheikh Fadai, it is believed that in most of the ahadith we have this famous quote of Prophet Muhammad that the month of Sha'ban is my month. What does it mean exactly? Prophet Muhammad has stated that the month of Sha'ban is my month. I mean, my beloved month. What does it mean exactly?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. If we want to comprehend this riwayah better, we should consider that the month of Ramadan is called Shahrullah. Yes. The month of God.
Very good.
Because of the rahmah, because of the blessing that God gave to his abd. And as we know, Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam is called Rahmatullah, Rahmatan lil alameen.
Mm-hmm.
It means that Prophet is the gate in order to go through the Rahmatullah.
Uh-huh.
First of all, you get the blessing of Prophet, then you get ready to get the blessing of God in Shahrullah.
Mm-hmm.
Shahrun Nabi is the gate for Shahrullah.
Very good.
So in the month of Sha'ban, when we do the Adhan al-Munajat, dua, fasting,
yes,
we get reward not just by God, but of course by our Prophet.
Uh-huh.
And he has a different and special looking at us.
Mm-hmm.
So we get ready for the next month. I want to...
Is Prophet Muhammad, does he have this authority to bless his people and his followers with rahmah or something like that?
Of course, yes. Uh-huh. Of course. You know, okay. As we know, he has the position of shafa'a at the other world. Uh-huh. But it's not just for the other world. Even in this world, he has the authority to give the blessing and sometimes in order to curse some people. Why not?
Okay.
But for the previous prophets, we have in our history that some of them cursed their ummah, their nation.
Yes.
But the only prophet that never cursed your ummah was Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam. Because of that, he was called Rahmatun lil Alameen. Mm-hmm. So Ayatollah Jawadi, as one of the prominent scholars of Islamic Hawza, he has a very beautiful sentence about Sha'ban.
Yes.
He says that some people consider the month of Ramadan as the beginning of their months. Their year, sorry.
Yeah.
Ramadan is the beginning of moral year. Moral year. Uh-huh. Not according to calendar.
Yes.
People who care about the morality, they consider Ramadan the first month of their moral year. And in order to have a good beginning, uh-huh, they start to get ready before the new year. Uh-huh. Like us. For example, before New Year, we get ready in order to have some celebration.
We make some preparations.
And enjoy, yes, that new year.
Yes.
He says that people who care about morality, they get ready for their New Year celebration, which is Ramadan. And that time for getting ready, yes, is Sha'ban. In Sha'ban, they do repentance, they recite a lot of munajat and, yes, dua, and they get ready for that New
Year.
So
when the New Year is coming, is as Ramadan is called the spring of the years,
yes,
okay, isn't it? Can say the Rabi of the years. So you are becoming renewed.
Yes.
So a kind of renovation or we can say renewal is needed in order to get into the holy month of Ramadan, and that is the month of Sha'ban.
Yes, exactly. Okay. You know, Ayatollah Jawadi used the word debt. He says, uh-huh, that in the month of Sha'ban, a real mu'min try to pay his debt, mm-hmm, whether haqqullah or haqqunnas.
Uh-huh.
And that is the preparation for the spring of New Year, which is Ramadan. Uh-huh. That is the significance of the month of Sha'ban.
That's right. Okay.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
So in this way, Shaykh Rouhani, we must prepare ourselves during the month of Sha'ban for the month of Ramadan. And according to so many people all around the world, even in the Islamic lands, if everything starts with the first day of the month of Ramadan, but now Sha'ban is also significant, isn't it?
Yes, of course. In the holy month of Sha'ban, we have a special supplication, which is called Al-Munajat Al-Sha'baniya.
Uh-huh, very good.
Narrated from Amir al-Mu'minin Ali, yes, alayhi salatu, yes, wassalam, and it was being recited by all the imams.
Yes.
So this supplication is the total instance of the supplication and the mood of the best of, let's say, servants of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yes.
Since this munajat and this supplication is issued by Imam Ali alayhi salatu wassalam and narrated directly from this imam, it is one of the very beautiful and very significant munajat and supplication. In the view of Imam Khomeini, radwanullahi ta'ala alayh, Munajat al-Sha'baniya, this supplication is one of the greatest supplications and one of the vastest divine wisdom which only some people can benefit from, mm-hmm, from it to the extent of their, let's say, understanding.
Yes.
Then, according to the late Ayatollah Mirza Jawad Maliki,
yes,
he says that al-Sha'baniya supplication contains a vast knowledge about the quality of the dealing of servant with God,
mm-hmm,
and it is the manner of supplication and asking, let's say, forgiveness.
Yes.
And the Supreme Leader, Great Ayatollah Sayyid Ali al-Khamenei, is of the view that al-Sha'baniya supplication, which is narrated by the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salatu wassalam, we're reciting it is as one of the supplications that their mystical style and their eloquent expressions have a very, let's say, prominent content and full of, let's say, divine wisdom,
yes,
which is not found in ordinary tongues and expressions, and yes, basically could not be stated with ordinary, yes, kind of tongues.
Yes.
And the supplication is a complete instance of, let's say, horizon and supplication of the righteous servants of God, to their beloved God and to the Holy Lord.
Yes.
So these are the ideas of the great scholars like Ayatollah Khamenei, the late Ayatollah Jawadi Maliki, and the late Imam, yes, Khomeini, which shows that how much significant is the holy month of Sha'ban and this particular and unique supplication for this month, which is issued by Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen,
yes,
Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, and it is recited, it was recited by the A'imma alayhi salatu wasalam. Yes. So that's why one of the best recommendations for this holy month for our audience, brothers and sisters, is that to refer to this dua and supplication and try to read it in this, yes, holy month of Sha'ban.
In one extract of this Munajat al-Sha'baniya, we read, "Oh my God, place me among your loyal people, in the position of someone who hopes for the excess of your love. And, oh my God, inspire me the passion to your remembrance with your remembrance, and put my efforts in the happiness of achieving your attributes and your holy place. Oh my God, I invoke you by yourself that you join me to the place of the people obedient to you and to the nice abode of your pleasure, because I can neither defend nor I can benefit myself." This is really beautiful supplication. Also, Salawat al-Sha'baniya, yes, we have it in this month. And how beautiful if we observe the rituals and the worshipping acts during the month of Sha'ban, how beautiful we can enter the holy month of Ramadan, Sheikh Fadai, isn't it?
Yes, of course. You know, connecting with God and praying can be done in any way.
Yes.
We have in the Quran this verse, "Ud'uni astajib lakum."
Uh-huh.
It means in any way, if you talk with God, God would talk you back.
Yes.
But there's a question. Why are we recommended to recite special du'as and munajat, uh-huh, like Salawat Sha'baniya, Munajat Sha'baniya?
Yes.
You know, because when we want to pray by our word, by our knowledge, we do not know exactly what to say, uh-huh, and how to say.
Very good.
You know, these are two problems. What to say or what to ask.
Some etiquettes are,
yes,
needed.
And
yes,
how to, okay, what to, okay, ask and how to ask.
Yes.
But in these munajats and du'as, we can learn how to be connected with God. Uh-huh. For example, in Munajat al-Sha'baniya, we can see that this is a very romantic the conversation
a
with
lovely
God.
One, that's
a
right.
lovely one.
Yes.
Just pay attention to these two sentences.
Very good.
"Ilahi, in akhadhtani bijurmi akhadhtuka bi'afwik." If I want to translate it very,
very
easily, I have to say, "Oh God, if you ask me, why did you commit the sin? I will ask you, why didn't you forgive me? You're my God. Ilahi, in adkhalta lin-nar a'lamtu ahlaha anni uhibbuk. If you send me to the fire of the hell, I will tell anyone and I shout that I loved you. So how can you send me to the fire of hell?" You know, this is the deep love,
yes,
with God. And this is the good way of connection.
That's right.
Unless we cannot follow the religion by force. The best way to follow the religion, yes, is love.
Yes.
And in the month of Sha'ban, two recommended actions, if we want to,
yes,
mention the most important,
yes,
one.
Very good.
The first one, munajat,
yes,
dua, like munajat al-Sha'baniya. And the second one, fasting.
Fasting, yes.
Sawm.
Sawm, that's
There is a hadith from Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. He said, "Rahimallahu man a'anani ala shahri."
Mm-hmm.
God will forgive and bless the one who helped me, the Prophet,
yes,
who helped me in my month. What does it mean to help me?
Uh-huh.
It means that I, as a Prophet called Rahmatun Lil Alameen,
yes,
want to bless you But you have to do something.
Yes.
And let me to bless you.
Okay.
Because of that, Imam Baqir said, فَمَنْ صَامَ شَعْبَانَ فَقَدْ أَدْرَكَتْهُ دَعْوَةُ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ لِقَوْلِهِ عَلَيْهِ السَّلَامُ رَحِمَ اللَّهُ مَنْ أَعَانَنِي عَلَى شَهْرِي.
Yes.
If you want to observe the word of Prophet, it's better to fast in the month of
yes.
Sha'ban. So Prophet has the authority to bless in you.
Yes, that's right. Astaghfirullah allazi la ilaha illallah wa ar-rahman ar-rahim al-hayy al-qayyum wa atubu ilayh. You know, this is another religious formula. Or astaghfirullah wa as'aluhu al-tawbah. You know, astaghfirullah wa rabbi wa atubu ilayh. You know, these are even giving charity, saying salawat, and fasting, as you said, during this month. Because there are so many birthday anniversaries during this month. Allahumma inni as'alaka bihaq al-mawluda fi hazal yawm. Okay? So you swear Allah by the birthday of a great person. The most important ones in Imam As on the 15th day of Sha'ban. Paying ziyarah to Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam on the 15th day of the month of Sha'ban is another recommended action. This is one of the special days that you could pay visit to the holy tomb of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam.
There is a neglected yes. recommended action
yes.
in Sha'ban.
Yes.
That is ihya, being awake.
Keeping vigil.
The nights of 15th of Ramadan. Like the ihya that we have in
Sha'ban.
Sorry, Sha'ban.
Ramadan, yes.
Like the ihya that we have in three nights of Ramadan, it is recommended to have ihya on the night of 15th of Sha'ban. Which is the night of birthday of Imam As.
Yes,
so it's right. very commended, but usually people don't pay attention.
Don't pay attention. That's right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Fadai and Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding the significance of the holy month of Sha'ban. Do not forget us in your prayers and supplications during this beautiful month of Sha'ban, dear Muslims all around the world. And for more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
I know that you could easily take away everything you've given me, and I try to remember not to take anything for granted.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. Please don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.ir. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah. Ya Allah, don't let me go astray, cause I need you by my side. I wish to be to you throughout my life, ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
A new analysis by Joseph Rowntree Foundation, JRF, has found 1 million more people were living in poverty in the UK in 2021 to 2022 than in the previous year, as the cost of living crisis worsened. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT wrote, 1 million more people were living in poverty in the UK in 2021 to 2022 than in the previous year, as the cost of living crisis worsened. New analysis by Joseph Rowntree Foundation, JRF, has found. The charity's report says 14.4 million people, including 4.2 million children, were in poverty in 2021 to 2022, with an increasing number unable to afford food or pay their energy bills. This is up from a total of 13.4 million people, including 3.9 million children, the year before. It has been almost 20 years and 6 prime ministers since the last prolonged period of falling poverty in the UK. Instead, over the last 2 decades, we have seen poverty deepen, with more and more families falling further and further below the poverty line, said the group chief executive of JRF, Paul Kissack. Six million people had incomes far below the standard poverty line and were thus in very deep poverty in 2021 to 2022, according to the report. The poverty gap, or the amount of money needed to bring the incomes of the poorest people back to the poverty line, has grown wider. Those in this category would, on average, need to more than double their income to escape poverty, the JFR wrote. A couple with 2 children under the age of 14 is reportedly defined as being in very deep poverty if their annual household income is below £14,600. Larger families, disabled people, part-time workers, and the self-employed, as well as people living in rented accommodation, were identified as among those facing particularly high levels of poverty. The JFR report also raised concerns about the future levels of hardship, since inflation in the country is still running at twice the target level. Benefits are taking time to catch up with rising prices. Employment is starting to fall. Earnings are still below their 2008 levels, and housing costs are increasingly rapidly. Meanwhile, Guardian reported the UK's cost of living crisis is fueling a record surge in shoplifting as people increasingly turn to the black market for food. Estimates by the British Retail Consortium show that retail thefts cost the industry £1 billion in 2023, the newspaper said. Meanwhile, Home Office data shows that shoplifting has reached its highest level since records began, while the number of unresolved incidents has also risen. According to the report, the items most commonly stolen are meat, cheese, and sweets, which are typically considered high-value goods that can be resold. The items are being stolen in large quantities from shops and trucks in the UK in order to be sold to people hit by soaring prices. Guardian added the cost of living crisis has made people think of alternative ways of sourcing items that are essential to them. The chief executive of the British Independent Retailers Association, Andrew Goodacre, was quoted as saying, Shops that had not previously faced shoplifting reported that thieves were clearing whole shelves in seconds. Goodacre said, "I think that's because the black market has got so much bigger." Meanwhile, Wendy Chamberlain, a former police officer turned Liberal Democrat MP who chairs the all-party parliamentary group for the elimination of food banks, claimed it is unsurprising that people are obtaining food through criminal means, as important nutritional foods have essentially rocketed in price. According to Chamberlain, food poverty in the UK could be particularly acute at this time of year, with food banks providing only essentials that are generally not particularly attractive or nutritional. When money is tight, when they've spent a long time saying no to other family members, the opportunity to buy something a bit more premium and high-end, with ask no questions and off the back of a lorry, as it were, is appealing, she told The Guardian. A recent report by the UK Competition and Markets Authority, CMA, showed many popular grocery suppliers have been pushing up prices by more than their cost, fueling so-called greedflation and making excessive corporate profits. The study found that over the last 2 years, around three-quarters of branded suppliers in products such as infant formula, baked beans, mayonnaise and pet food have increased their unit profitability and in doing so have contributed to higher food price inflation. The CMA report indicated that food price inflation in the UK continues to be at historically high levels despite falling to 10.1% in October.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.